Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world. And now your hosts, Yog and Manish.
Welcome to yet another episode of the ABM Conversations podcast. This is your host, Manish Nepal.
And this is me, Yagneshwaran Ganesh.
In today's episode, we are going to discuss revenue operations, or RevOps as it's commonly referred. And to do that, with us today, we have Justin Gray, the founder and CEO of LeadMD. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Justin, I and Yag obviously follow you closely online and we admire what you do. But for the benefit of the listeners of the ABM Conversations podcast, can you introduce yourself, maybe tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. So as you mentioned, Justin Gray, I'm the, or rather I should say my day job is I am the CEO and founder of a marketing performance consultancy called LeadMD. We help organizations with everything from go-to-market strategy down into revenue operations process and the tactics to get that done. So we've at this point worked at, with just over 3,800 high growth and enterprise level organizations, and we're in the 10th year of business.
That's awesome, and I am sure we are going to get deeper into those things later in the show. But let me start with some of the basics. I think the term RevOps gets thrown around very casually these days. In fact, not many people realize that RevOps has both an internal as well as an external customer-facing side to it. So if you were to define it, Justin, how would you define RevOps? And maybe tell us a little bit about the different role and responsibilities it entails.
Yeah, so I think first off, what you mentioned there is really important in that, you know, revenue operations or marketing operations, sales operations, like the leading term there, right? Revenue or marketing or sales is the most important aspect of that role and that concept to me. You know, this is at its center marketing. Its goal is to drive revenue, to drive sales. And then, of course, combining that with how those, you know, the process, the people, the technology, how do we actually make that happen? Where does the rubber meet the road? With the influx of technology that we've seen over the last decade, it's created the necessity for expertise and for specialization in running all of these different platforms. But more importantly than that, it's designing, you know, it's a translation layer. It's the translation of your strategy, your go-to-market, your buyer engagement approach into the tactics to actually make that happen. So it's a critical role, but when operations starts to kind of overtake, you know, that leading term and it becomes all about, you know, plugging in wires, pulling levers, pushing buttons, I think that's where revenue operations really falls down. At the end of the day, it's about how do I translate a very relationship-based offline concept into digital? So, you know, absolutely critical that we make that translation, but we can't forget about, at the end of the day, what our goal is here. And that is to engage the buyer and to drive revenue. So it's a very, really symbiotic mission charge, right? Like how do I drive revenue through the operations of the organization? And we can't forget either side of that coin.
That's beautifully put. And you know, the best part is, Justin, you work with some of the largest brands in the world of B2B. And you've also been part of hundreds and hundreds of Marketo implementations. And that means, you know, you have seen companies in their 1 to 10 million sprints or 10 to 20 million, and in fact, rolled out playbooks for them. So, you know, I personally enjoy the 1 to 10 sprint, but hate the process and scaling journey that kicks in between 10 to 20 or probably even 10 to 100. So what is your sweet spot? And maybe, you know, can you take us through the journey of how you go about analyzing and building the playbook for a particular sprint?
Yeah, I think our, you know, I can talk firmographics and demographics all day in terms of our ICP. And although that's an important dimension, you know, most of the organizations that we work with are 100 million and up. We do work with some companies on the lower end of that spectrum that are, as I mentioned before, high growth organizations. They're folks that are mature. They understand that they're building not for today, but they're building for tomorrow. And those tend to be kind of the commonalities of those smaller orgs that we work with. But the most important aspect to our ICP is what we call the presence of a catalyst, right? Someone who wants to drive improvement, someone who wants to drive change. And so when we start talking to an organization, that's actually the most important dimension. You know, the firmographics and so on give us a feel for budget. It gives us a feel for what is realistic for that organization. But if we don't have someone, and this can be, you know, it has to be someone that can obviously make decisions, right? But if we don't have someone that is just absolutely hell-bent on driving change and getting better day over day and being that inflection point within an organization, that's a recipe for an engagement that is either going to fail or is going to have a lower level of impact for that organization and that organization's customers. So that catalytic element is just so critical to success.
How do you go about, building the playbook, once you recognize these are the companies at 100 million plus, like what are the things that you factor in for, suggesting that this is the way you go about your marketing? This is your playbook.
Yeah. So I think first, the term playbook gets thrown around a lot, and I do think that they have value. But the most important thing to understand about a playbook is we don't create them for our best reps. We create them for our worst reps, right? Or to translate, to catalyze someone's maturity within that role. So when we're looking at an organization and they're saying, hey, help us build a sales playbook or a marketing playbook, they're really looking for a recipe, right? A best practices approach. And therefore, we're going to mirror those best individuals. So the most important thing to do when you're talking about any sort of playbook creation is understanding who's doing this really well today. What are those understandings that they have about the buyer? What are they doing to engage that buyer? How are they fostering that relationship? And then we can take that model and apply scale to it. We can break that down into process. We can break that down into signals in terms of intent that we're looking for or behaviors that we're looking for and what the response is to those behaviors. And then we're going to use that to essentially standardize, to create that benchmark across our organization. So we're always looking for, who are your top performing reps? What are your top performing campaigns? What are those commonalities that we can pull from those initiatives and that we can translate into a playbook that's going to guide someone new to the role? It's going to guide someone from a consistency standpoint. So we're really looking to emulate our A-level initiatives and individuals when we approach a playbook. So understanding that, and then again, translating that into something that's going to have a high degree of longevity, right? Like playbooks aren't PowerPoint presentations. I think that's where the role of revenue operations becomes really important, because we can acquire systems and we can build within those systems the ability to select those motions, right? Like our playbooks have to be technology enabled. So when I see X, I respond with Y. Or at least when I see X, here's what I think about on my side to determine the best messaging, the best engagement to further that buyer along their buying cycle.
Right. That makes so much sense. I also want to, touch upon the relationship, the symbiotic relationship that you mentioned between marketing operations and revenue operations, because generally only a very small percentage of leads from marketing translates into revenue. If I remember correctly, it is 1% for most organizations across industries. And that is probably also the reason why marketing team is among the first one to get the axe first when the tide isn't in the favor of the business, right? So if, my question to you is, if marketing is to make a real contribution to revenue, what is the first place to start with? To be more precise, what are some of the things that you think a CMO needs to fix if they have to turn things around?
Yeah, what an abysmal stat, right? Like that stat that you're referencing is a Forrester stat. I think it's like a 2019 stat, a little bit old at this point, but nothing dramatic has changed between then and now, certainly in the wake of COVID. And so I think as we're exploring what's driving that trend, we have to look at the commonalities and some of the problems that have existed in marketing for years and years. Like, this is not something new. And that is the fact that we place superficial leading metrics on marketing in terms of their performance KPIs. You know, can marketing achieve its goal absent of the business achieving its goal? And largely the answer to that question right now is yes. So when we think about some of those KPIs, right, like the vanity metrics, stuff we've been kind of preaching against for years and years, opens, clicks, eyeballs, marketing qualified leads, these are all leading metrics that a team could absolutely achieve and be touted as successful. And yet there's no attachment of those metrics to lagging results. So the first piece of advice that I always provide to marketing leadership, a CMO, is, does your team have a connection to lagging results? And is that the lens that we're viewing their success through? And most often, again, like the answer to that is no, they do not. So that's one of the fundamental shifts that has to occur in marketing. And I understand that's difficult, right? Like, marketing is by nature a discipline of influence. And therefore, unlike sales, I'm not going to be able to make a call and the next day see an opportunity open. That's just not the nature of marketing. In fact, marketing, we have to surround that buyer. We have to influence them. And at the point to where their pain finally aligns with the value and the result that we can provide, now they're going to, you know, be prompted to ask for more information or to enter a sales cycle or to reach out to a rep. So it's difficult, but we can't let that difficulty send us off track in terms of the importance of that lagging connection to revenue. First and foremost, some element of marketing's performance has to be based around lagging results. What are they actually producing in terms of active pipeline, closed pipeline, customer lifetime value?
Right. That makes a lot of sense. In fact, that is the reason why attribution overall becomes very difficult. That's very well summarized. And I love the metrics that you just mentioned. But, you know, going further, I want to dig something that we discussed on the Zoom call, you know, when we first connected. One of the fundamentals of optimizing for revenue or achieving true ROI is being able to map revenue goals with the right people, process, and technology. And that's obviously, you know, it's not as easy as it sounds. And you guys at LeadMD have a very practical and probably even a very tactical framework that's called Revenue Acceleration Framework. I love the internal lingo that you guys have for it, Revenue AF. So can you just give us an overview of what that framework is all about?
Yeah, and that's matured and evolved over time. We're actually calling it the Catalyst Marketing Framework right now, exactly for the reasons I mentioned earlier, right? You have to have someone that wants to catalyze change. And at the same time, those strategies within an organization, the things that kind of reside at the top of our framework, are going to inform everything in the downline there. So what is my, you know, and this speaks to the, again, the fundamental disconnect in marketing, in that marketing is largely looked at through a tactical lens. What campaigns are we running? What channels are succeeding? What are those tactical channels producing in terms of leads or, you know, maybe initial qualification calls, so on, if we're following it a bit longer. But we have a real tendency to view those tactics in a silo. Again, as I alluded to, like, we can't look at that independent of all of the dependencies that exist on that framework. And that's what the Catalyst Marketing Framework is really about, which is dependency. So if you have, and this gets back to revenue operations folks, right? Like, you can't approach a campaign as a point solution, as a point in time initiative. It has to be driven by, what are we trying to achieve as a business? What is the value that we're providing to our buyer? What is the ultimate impact that they're looking to make with our product or our solution? And you have to ensure that informs everything there. We call that informed delivery. We see this a lot of times with the implementation of technology. And technology has really become a proxy for maturity, which is a false proxy, i.e., how mature is your tech stack? What types of software are you running? And therefore, people look upon that as an indicator of how well put together that organization is and how mature they are as a marketing org and just as a revenue producing org in general. That is 1000% false. Like, we have to look at each one of those areas as we're approaching software implementation. If you're simply, you know, thinking about software in terms of like, hey, it plugs in and it's got data and therefore it's going to run, absolutely false. Like, we have to look at our segmentation that we're building out in those softwares, our campaigns, our programs, the buying life cycle, and ensure that is informed by what we're trying to do as an organization this year. So it's a complete equation of dependency. And that's really what the framework provides is what is that map of dependency? If we're going to go out there and launch X campaign, what do we need to know across the board in order to ensure the success of that campaign? And I think those dependencies are something that are woefully overlooked and neglected within marketing.
Right. This is amazing. You know, I'm so intrigued about this. Maybe, you know, if you can tell us a little bit in terms of when an organization comes to you, when a client comes to you and you implement this, Catalyst marketing framework to them, like what are the kind of steps they typically go through? Like, what is the process from there?
Yeah, I think awareness is probably the first step there. Just the understanding that the initiative they thought they were, you know, so marketers are highly prescriptive and you know, that can be a good thing as well. But very rarely does an organization approach us and we end up doing that exact engagement that they approached us with. So let's just say someone comes to us and says, you know, we want to better engage our buyer by leveraging marketing automation, sales engagement tools, whatever they may be. Here's what we've chosen. Can you help us implement those? The first thing that we're going to do is take a big step back and start mapping those dependencies. Yes, we can help you implement that marketing automation tool. Again, we've done over 3,800 of those across the last 10 years, more than anyone on the planet. And I can tell you with 100% confidence that the success of that software implementation is going to be based on how well that organization has done the work on the strategy side of the house. How well do they know their market? How well do they know their buyer? How much information have they gathered on that buyer? How do we engage those individuals? What is the right messaging at the right time to produce the right result? So as we're implementing that piece of technology, we're going to be looking across that CMF, the Catalyst Marketing Framework, determining the dependencies, and then determining where that organization is at in terms of successfully assembling those leading dependencies, right? Like, and we're going to find gaps there. So we're always assessing, and then we're going to determine, do we need to build something or do we need to optimize something that's already in place? And the answer to that is most often yes, right? Like, we're going to have to build things. We're going to have to optimize things in each case so that we can ensure the performance of that tactic, of that software implementation, and also that everyone running that software on a day-to-day basis is informed by those critical leading dependencies. If you ask your average revenue operations individual, who is your buyer and what is our unique value proposition for those individuals, you're often going to get a varied response there and one that's not in line with something that a CEO or a CRO, CMO in that organization is aware of. So really critical that number one, we acknowledge those dependencies. Number two, we hop in and we optimize or build where necessary, and that we ingrain those within the organization. It's does everything that we do center around the buyer, what their needs, our solutions, and the ultimate value that they're trying to drive. And now we can go implement that software solution. Then we can enable our teams and we can optimize performance over time. But we have to step back and look at those critical dependencies and acknowledge we've got some work to do before we can ever get to that shiny object at the end of the rainbow there.
Sure. Yeah, that is very well put, Justin. But I want to redial the conversation back to marketing operations again, because I think the relationship between marketing and revenue is just so interdependent. And like I said earlier, me and Yag, we try to follow you online. And one biggest gripes that we think you have about marketing teams is that the marketing teams aren't involved in the customer journey post the customer acquisition stage, right? Can you elaborate how that happens or why that happens, and what are the possible downsides to it?
Yeah, I think that happens because the overall focus of most teams is completely missing the mark, right? Like, we put so much focus on acquisition. You know, and in fact, the B2B SaaS model requires an incredibly rapid pace of customer acquisition. We're spending so much money to acquire it, to inform these buyers and to bring them into our customer stable, that it naturally warrants a lot of focus there, right? Like we put all of this attention to, are we acquiring, you know, massive amounts of new logos on a monthly basis? And everything becomes focused around that. However, when we're looking at the goals of an organization, they always center around customer lifetime value. They always center around retention. They always center around ensuring that the buyer is receiving value and therefore is going to maintain that customer relationship. So it really doesn't make sense to focus solely on the acquisition side of the house. Like, we have to be focused on the retention side and, more importantly, the fit side of the house. Are we bringing on the right types of organizations, the right types of customers? And are we managing that relationship with an incredibly intentional motion? And someone needs to own that end to end, right? Like when we talk about silos, we talked about, you know, software in silos, but really we've created the same silos around our teams. We've got marketing that hands to sales, that hands to customer success. There's a lot lost in translation across that process. And we have to recognize that first and foremost. I think COVID has been an awesome driver of that recognition, as teams really said, hey, how am I going to retain, how am I going to keep the lights on? I'm going to ensure that the clients that I have aren't going to be involved in this mass exodus and pull the rug out from underneath us. And I think that was a big eye-opening moment for a lot of teams there that said, I don't know what the state of our customer relationship is in. I don't know how mission critical they view our solution to their success. And therefore, I don't have a good feel of the risk, you know, the potential retention issues that we're going to experience. So that wake-up call, the organizations that have successfully navigated through these COVID times are the ones that have been able to understand at a fundamental level the strength of their customer relationships. And again, if there's one part of the organization that makes sense to own that relationship, it is marketing. You know, everything else needs to be informing marketing along that relationship. What are we learning as a result of the sales process? What are we learning as a result of their usage of our tool or our service? But someone has to be the steward of that relationship long-term. And I squarely believe that's marketing. To make that successful, each one of those teams has to be in lockstep in terms of their responsibilities in that overall journey. And what they filter up into marketing through data or through stories and conversations needs to form a complete picture of who that buyer is, what their organization needs to do, and how we're impacting the achievement of those goals. And if we have that information, we are going to know how things like COVID are impacting our buyer. We're going to know how we can step in and help them, you know, throughout times like this. And marketing has to be on the forefront of that conversation and owning that customer relationship.
Right. I absolutely can't agree more, because one of the complaints that I've always had about marketing is that, you know, marketing does not regularly talk to the customer. For example, a content marketing guy producing a significantly great piece of content has never spoken to a customer. And if he or she is not involved in the process, they're always going to talk based on assumptions. So what you just said, you know, really sums it up well. But Justin, you know, one of the biggest challenges that, you know, ops teams tend to have on the other side is that identifying, interpreting, and probably even responding to buying signals. You know, we are talking about how companies come into the ecosystem. And practically speaking, in a B2B setup, most decisions are never made by individuals. You're not selling to individuals all the time. It's probably sometimes a group, a set of people. It could be a committee. So what people's tend to seek, as you said earlier, is a playbook of sorts to handle the situation. But, you know, when your client tells you that they want to recognize their buying groups, like when these people are active, and they say that I want to respond to these people with their context at scale, like how do you look at it and what are the things that you look to fix?
Well, I think fundamentally you have to look at the concept of scale and ensure that it's being used in the right way, right? Like scale is one of those fundamental, you know, B2B SaaS things as well that can be a great enabler or it can be the detriment of an organization.
right, right.
So like, manual processes makes total sense to scale them. Conversations with our buyer and the management of that relationship, less so. So you know, number one, are we thinking about scale in the right way? Because scale overdone is absolutely a detachment from the customer, right? Like, I can send them all these automated messages, but should I? Is it furthering the relationship? In many cases, the answer to that question is no. So I think we have to be really careful about how we think about scale and perceive that as our ultimate goal. I don't think scale is that ultimate goal. I think that there are elements that can be scaled, but the customer relationship is that ultimate goal. So we have to keep that in mind. And I think if you keep that as the centerpiece that guides action across an organization, you'll be much better equipped and you know to weather storms like we're in the middle of right now, because everyone has become so detached from that customer organization. To your point, it's insane that marketers would not be talking to a client. How in the world can we market and sell a solution unless we understand what's going on in the mind of that buyer? So I think scale in situations like that is just an incredibly negative concept.
Justin, at this point, I want to notch up things a little bit, and I want to ask you if you're up for an interesting game of rapid-fire questions.
Sure, let's do some rapid-fire.
I'm sure you're going to love it because most of our previous guests have really enjoyed it. It's the most fun part of the podcast. And the questions that I'm going to ask you are short and quick, but your answers don't have to be. Yeah. And let's start with question number one.
Sure.
We know that you love farming because you own and operate a 130 acres farm somewhere down in Missouri. But we also know that farming is not very easy. It needs a lot of patience. So what needs more patience according to you, farming or marketing?
Good question. Yeah, I own a hemp farm, and it's another great lesson in the value of frustration. I would say that farming is more frustrating simply because you've got the element of weather there, and although people are often a massive variable that can be unpredictable, nothing is more unpredictable than the weather.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, external variables are definitely critical in farming more than marketing. Question number two, what's been the most effective customer acquisition channel for lead MD? Is it inbound or outbound?
That's interesting because it's a combination of both. Like, the most effective acquisition channel for us is relationships. About 80% of our business comes in the door through relationships. And I think you'll find that as a commonality for most agencies and consultancies. But it's absolutely because of the approach that we've taken to curating and fostering those relationships, whether it's a past client that's moved on to a different organization, whether it's a partner, whether it's just friendship that we have within the industry. Like, the very active formation and curation of those relationships has led to what is a massively consistent acquisition channel for us. So I think it's something, you know, like most channels, it requires a bit of both, but most of all, it requires intentionality.
Sure. It sounds more like you're more on the inbound side, if I'm not mistaken, because relationships, I think, you know, happens as a virtue of delivering value time and again to your customers. So
correct.
Anyways, moving on, question number three. If you had to suggest one metric to your clients to measure the efficiency of their RevOps, what would that be and why?
The efficiency of RevOps, interesting dimension there. In defining efficiency, I think you have to obviously take into account, like, it's not just about how quickly people are getting things done or how effectively they're getting things done. It's how effectively are they getting the right things done. And so I would still default to lagging metrics there. How much pipeline are we building? How quickly are we able to respond to changes within the industry? COVID's been a great metric for a lot of organizations because they had to completely change their go-to-market mix. They had to completely change the tactical channels through which they were marketing. So how quickly can we get something from concept to execution, I think, is another great metric there. Like, do we have our systems configured in a way that allows us to respond to change? So I would bring in some element of a change KPI there, an agility KPI, which I think is going to be super important for marketing over the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, as well as what are the results that we're generating through that change and our ability to gain visibility into that performance. And again, make optimal, you know, optimization changes based on that visibility. So there's obviously a couple dimensions there, but as I think any good team's KPIs are, like, some element of how quickly are we able to respond to change and how well are those changes performing from a pipeline build or revenue acquisition standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. I think that was a great answer. Question number four, what is an interesting behavior that you have observed in your users, the users of LeadMD, when they use your service or product?
I think the probably the number one interesting behavior is our ability and their ability to progress along their career by leveraging LeadMD, our ability to have an influence on the personal and professional growth of our clients. I think that's probably also one of the most fulfilling elements. So, like, we measure a lot of that with NPS score because it does a great job of just wrapping up the health of a relationship with a nice little bow on top. But if you look at where our clients have progressed within their own careers and where those organizations have gone as a result of that relationship, that's to me is certainly the most interesting indicator of success there.
Question number five, what is one thing that you have observed that was common across companies that broke down in the COVID period?
100% answer there. The companies that did not have a good understanding of how they were truly impacting the performance of their client organizations, some of those organizations aren't even around anymore, right? Like the number one indicator of health there was, do we understand how we're impacting the goals of our clients? And then certainly from that understanding and that straight line of sight, we can determine how are those goals going to change as a result of COVID, right? Like, but you have to have that fundamental understanding of how mission critical your software, your solution, whatever you're providing is to that client and how they view you as a partner. We throw that partner term around quite a bit, which I think is just an absolute bastardization and a really poor misnomer. To be a true partner, we have to have that fundamental understanding that the client has to view us as a partner and they have to see us as something that can impact the performance of their org and the growth of their organization and even themselves personally, professionally, right? If we don't have a line of sight into that impact, we're not going to succeed. And that's squarely what the organizations that have really struggled through COVID, where they have struggled.
Right. In fact, the companies that have stuck to the fundamentals have been the ones that have stood the test of time. So beautifully put. And you know, in the last 30 plus minutes, we have covered so much in the area of RevOps, and we absolutely love everything that you said. But before we let you go, we would love to take a parting message. Any parting message that you would have to our audience.
Yeah, I would say it certainly centers around that topic that we just discussed, right? Like the proximity to the customer is the ultimate goal for a marketer. Like, we have to understand what's going on inside the minds of our buyers, what the change that they're looking to impact, and our role within that change. So talk to your clients, get on calls with sales. Everything is virtual right now. And quite frankly, that's opened the door to a lot of willingness to hop on a call, to have a discussion. You have to be bringing value to that discussion. But certainly, I have not seen many instances where a marketer reaches out and says, hey, I just want to have a discussion about how COVID's impacting your business to ensure that we're doing everything that we can to help you. People are taking those calls. So reach out to your customer base, form relationships there, and view that as one of the primary value adds that you're conducting on a daily basis. If you do that, there's no way that you do not become a better marketer.
Right. And unfortunately, most of those COVID messages that I've received are the ones that, try to sell more on the name of COVID.
Yeah. If value is not the centerpiece there, things are going to come off as just false empathy, right? And we saw a lot of that with COVID. Like, I want to know how your business is doing in the wake of COVID. And I think we have a solution that you could leverage to get better, right? Like, right. When you bring value to the front of that conversation, you just say, like, what are you struggling with? I'd love to make some intros to someone that can help. Maybe there's something that we can provide that maybe we would have charged for previously that I'm willing to give to you. And become that agent of change and that agent of help for that business. Like, you have to put you know, help on the front line. You have to bring present that with empathy and just ensure that the relationships and the value that you're able to gain there are going to pay off down the road. We can't look at the immediate gratification of result and say, like, that's my metric during COVID. How many people did I help? And how much value did I provide has to be the centerpiece there.
Right. Absolutely. So, you know, to our listeners, like, you know, who loved your conversation today, if they want to get in touch with you, so what is the best place to connect with you?
Yeah, email is always my chosen vice. So if you want to send me an email, I'm jgray, J-G-R-A-Y, at leadmd.com. Also pretty active on LinkedIn. You can search for me there and we'll absolutely connect. And then finally, Twitter, I'm at jgraymatter. And I love Twitter for just kind of ad hoc conversations and so on. But if you reach out, I guarantee I will get back to you.
Brilliant. And I love that, the Twitter handle, jgraymatter. That's very clever.
Thank you.
All right. So that's that for today's episode. And until you guys catch up with us the next time, we'll come back with another guest or probably another topic between me and Manish. And until then, this is Bai from me, Yag.
And this is Bai from me, Manish. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations Podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.